next case for this morning is Allen v. Martin.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is John Curley. I represent the plaintiff appellant, James Allen. We're asking the court, in hearing this appeal, to reverse the trial court's decision granting summary judgment in favor of the defendants. Primarily, two points of contention here on this appeal. First, there's a genuine issue of material fact that should have prevented the trial court from entering summary judgment for the defendants. Secondly, the court made error in failing to allow the parties additional time to conduct discovery after converting the defendant's Rule 12 motion to a Rule 56 motion for summary judgment. Mr. Allen was an employee of the Illinois Department of Transportation. His position was called Bureau Chief Accounting and Auditing. Now, as this court well knows in handling many of these cases over the years, when it comes to political termination cases, the court looks at whether or not the employee had either direct or indirect meaningful input on issues involving governmental decision making, where there is principled room, or there's room for principled disagreement on goals or implementation. Sometimes courts will look at the position description that's applicable to the employee and say, this is or is not one of those jobs. This is a job where politics matters or it doesn't. In Mr. Allen's case, politics did not matter, and for that reason, the trial court was incorrect. What the trial court did was simply look at the job description and drew conclusions from that description that frankly weren't supported by the record. In fact, the opposite conclusion would have been supported by the record before the court.
Can you tell me what sections or provisions of the personnel code are applicable to his position?
Certainly. It's found in the Illinois Administrative Code. It would be under Title 2, Section 1225.230. Section 1225.230, and specifically subsection A. And in fact, that particular provision really shows how glaring the error was by the trial court. Because if you look at the Illinois Department of Transportation, huge organization in the state of Illinois, you know, they're in charge of the transportation throughout the state, the land, air, rail, many other things. And by administrative rule, the Illinois Department of Transportation is broken down into 10 separate divisions and offices. And within those 10 separate divisions and offices, you have anywhere from 2 to 10 separate bureaus. Now, Mr. Allen happened to be in one of 6 bureaus of the Office of Finance and Administration. And it was the Bureau of Accounting and Auditing. And it's a very specific provision. It says in there, in the section that I cited to you, this bureau will provide general accounting and auditing services within the department. These include general cost accounting, recommendations on internal financial policies, procedures and control, management of federal billing, and internal external auditing. So, what is that? Well, that's keeping track of numbers. That's basically the rendering of professional services. It is keeping track of money that comes in, keeping track of money that goes out, making sure that when a bill is paid, it's got an invoice for it, making sure that if at IDOT they are entitled to reimbursement, that there's documentation for it.
Is it determining how the numbers would be reported or how the assets would be allocated?
No, the trial court, and I asked for discovery so that those kinds of things could be determined, and the trial court said, no, your motion to conduct discovery is denied. And so we're sitting here without any of that information, any whatsoever. Now, I submitted an affidavit of Mr. Allen in support of my motion to conduct discovery and in opposition to the defendant's motion, where he explained, look, my job was keeping records. That's all I did.
How would you compare your case to the Selch versus Letts case?
Selch was a guy who dealt with maintaining roads. There were several sub-districts in Indiana when it came to the high...
There were like six districts, and each district had sub-districts. Sounds a little similar to yours, though.
Well, actually, there's a big difference in the function of the job and how it affects the public's perception of what's going on. You remember in the Selch case, there had been a recent gubernatorial election where the condition of the roads was a big issue. That was, I think, Governor Bayh. I think he was the one that got elected that year. And they made a big deal out of the roadway, saying, you know what, it's terrible. We got potholes everywhere, and the snow's not getting cleared off the roads. And Selch happened to be one of the guys in one of those sub-districts who got to make a decision on what roads we're going to fix in my sub-district, what roads we're going to go to first to clear the snow off. And he had a big impact on people driving down the road each morning trying to get to work, whether or not a road was clear. And that has a huge impact on the voter's view of how effective your department is running. But very seldom do you ever drive down the road and say, you know, we got a terrible Department of Transportation, because I'll bet you there may be some guy who doesn't file vouchers in the right spot. Big difference. You know, I can get mad as a taxpayer because my road's not cleared off, and it's immediate. We saw from an election here in Chicago years ago that not clearing snow off the road was a big, big deal. May have cost somebody an election. Historians say that. Nobody in history can say that an accountant who didn't file a paper in the right file folder cost somebody an election. We don't even think about those things as voters and taxpayers. It never crosses our mind. Far from the realm of political thinking. And so that's the difference between Mr. Allen's case and Mr. Selch's case. A huge difference here. Those kinds of things, by the way, that Mr. Selch did, that puts employees in the public eye, that really does get the voters thinking about whether or not there's an effective Department of Transportation, is specifically by rule assigned to other departments and other bureaus. And as I cited to the court, for example, there's an Office of Governmental Affairs, totally separate office from the one in which Mr. Allen worked. There is an Office of Public Affairs. Again, that's established by rule and has its own bureaus that deals with the public perception issues. So IDOT is organized in a way to make sure that those politically sensitive issues are dealt with in its own little department. Mr. Allen was not in those departments. He was simply a guy, and I've often referred to him as a bean counter. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. That's just a fact. He's an accountant. And his job is to say to his employees and the people in his department, we just need to be able to say to somebody that if we wrote a check, we've got a voucher to back it up. Or if we received a check from somebody, here's the contract that it went to. We're keeping records. That's what we're doing. And so if somebody wants to know where money was spent, we can push the button on our computer and we can say, oh yeah, there was $300,000 spent on that particular project. But you see, that's not providing input on important governmental policy-making decisions. That's not providing input at all. That's just providing information. That's all he's doing. Now, the defendants say, well, now wait a minute, Mr. Allen, he communicated with legislators. Well, that doesn't prove anything, except perhaps that politics shouldn't matter here, because, as you know, in Illinois, we have all over the state Republicans, Democrats, maybe independents. So it's not as if, though, he's only communicating with people from one particular party.
Did he ever advise management of potential problems and expenditures and grants?
We don't know what he actually did that. However, what we do know from his affidavit is that that is merely a record-keeping function.
Well, but you have to be able to figure it out. I mean,
sure. Let's say you have a contract with the federal government that you're going to get reimbursed $100,000 for a project, and you only get reimbursed $80,000. That's just a numbers issue. Yeah, there's a problem. We only got 80 of the 100,000 we should have gotten. So, make sure. sure that information gets to the right department so they can follow up on that. And I see that I'm in my rebuttal time.
Counsel.
May it please the court, Eric Light on behalf of the defendants appellees. The department is a $5 billion a year agency, give or take a few billion, for the and it's responsible for the transportation needs of the entire state of Illinois. The question here is, may the head of that department insist upon the loyalty of the one person who is responsible for all agency accounting, auditing, federal reimbursement, and business services? The answer is yes.
Were any other bureau chiefs in IDOT terminated in the first 6 months of Governor Blagojevich's administration?
I don't know.
The record doesn't tell us.
Bureau chief is not a low-level bean counter, as Mr. Allen suggests. Instead, he's a high-level supervisor responsible for keeping the secretary and his staff informed of crucial information upon which they make their policy decisions, keeping the agency accountable to the public, speaking for the agency on behalf on certain financial matters, and making sure that the agency gets hundreds of millions of dollars in federal highway aid reimbursement.
It seems to be pretty obvious here that the vast majority of his official duties were, you know, involved sort of rote bookkeeping matters, but a few. I mean, suppose that 99% of a government employee's duties involve routine bookkeeping duties, but 1% of the time he makes decisions about policies where there would be room for principled disagreement on policy. I mean, is it possible that there's a point at which an employee's policymaking role is so de minimis that he legitimately can't be considered a policymaker, unprotected? Even though he does have some policymaking.
I suppose if it truly is de minimis, probably, but that's not the situation here. Mr. Allen keeps suggesting that all bureau chief does is shuffle papers, record income and expenses, and pay bills. That's not the case. He does have an accounting function. He doesn't actually do the accounting. He's got 40 accountants who do that for him. But he also has an auditing function. And the auditing function is very important because the department does internal audits and external audits. It audits its own financial records to provide assurance to the secretary that those records are in fact accurate and that he can depend on them when making his policy decisions. They audit operations to make sure that, for example, control procedures are in place so that one person doesn't have access, receive money, deposit it, and have authority to spend it without any checks or balances. They also audit inventory so that the department knows what it actually has on hand and if it has to get more of it.
Would more discovery have helped this case?
No. In this case, you can tell from this from the job description that this man, this position, has a substantial input into policy making, and that the secretary should have the right to insist upon the loyalty of the occupant of this position.
Your opponent distinguished the Selsch case. Do you agree with his comments?
As I recall, what he said was that the person in Selsch, the position there, had the potential to influence how the public perceived the department, and that's exactly the case here. Remember, as I said, with the auditing function that the bureau chief performs, he audits the department's financial records and operations and inventory to make sure all those things are accurate. Why that affects how the public perceives the department is because the department is subject to external audit by other agencies. The Illinois Auditor General comes in every year, looks at the department's financial records. Federal Highway Administration officials look at the department's records to make sure that the department is spending the grant money that it gives in according to federal guidelines and regulations. And for example, Illinois Auditor General will issue an annual report that's available to the public where he can make negative audit findings. If he finds that there are problems with the way that the department is administering its funds, there'll be negative audit finding. And the more negative those findings, the greater embarrassment it is to the administration. So, yes, this position does have...
How many people on a comparable level, bureau chief, that is, hold those positions?
How many bureau chiefs are there?
NIDOT.
Oh, I don't know. That's not clear from the record. I don't know. There are about between 6,000 and 7,000 employees total, as far as I know.
Well, I was trying to compare it to the Selch case, which had districts and then sub-districts, and there were 30-plus...
Mm-hmm. Well, there are apparently five offices and five divisions, and if each of those had a comparable number of subdivisions, then there would be like 50 people at his level, but I don't know that for sure. Yeah.
See, that's the kind of thing discovery would have told us.
But it doesn't matter, because it's not the organizational chart which controls, it's the position's responsibilities, the responsibilities inherent in the position, and we can tell that from the position description, which Mr. Allen doesn't challenge. And if there's any question about whether or not, well, are there too many policymakers here, I guess the answer to that is this court's decision in Americanos, where all 80 assistant attorneys general in the Indiana Attorney General's office were held to be policymakers. That is, every line attorney was a policymaker. So people at the bottom rung of the organizational chart were deemed policymakers in that case. As for the bureau chief's responsibility for speaking for the agency, that is another area where it is very important to the secretary that this person exercise discretion and good political judgment. After all, if you've got legislators calling to find out how much money is being spent in my district, am I getting my fair share, you want someone who will handle that call with the proper amount of discretion. Finally, securing hundreds of millions of dollars of federal reimbursement, that is obviously that's something that everyone can agree on doing that, but it's such an important position, such an important function, that the secretary is entitled to have a person who he can totally depend on to do that. If this court doesn't have any other questions, we ask that the court affirm the judgment below.
Thank you. Right. You have 1 minute, Mr. Wright.
Thank you. The point was raised about an auditing function. Keep in mind, an auditing function is no more than what it really is. It's just comparing numbers. You know, I audit things at home every month when I get my visa statement. And other than kicking myself for using it, I also look to make sure the charges match the invoices. I audit it. It's no big deal. I just make sure numbers match up.
Develop and control the operating budget. I mean, like an area where there might be legitimate room for principal disagreement on goals, doesn't it?
Not in the context of Mr. Allen's position. Remember, the budget that he primarily dealt with was just a budget within his bureau of his particular office. If you look at the administrative rules, you'll see that the Bureau of Budget and Fiscal Management was the bureau that took care of IDOT's budget, not Mr. Allen's office. The Bureau of Budget and Fiscal Management was the one responsible for forecasting all revenues, expenditures, and managing all IDOT funds, developing, defending, and executing IDOT's total budget. So, the budget issue, the overall budget for IDOT, that was done by a totally different office, not Mr. Allen's office. He did not do that. By law, that was done somewhere else. So he did not do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.